Kol HaLashon, the entire Torah, everywhere.
Hi everybody, welcome to Coach Menachem Bernfeld on this beautiful winter night where it's pouring snow outside over here to share number 217. Thank you for joining. I always start off every week first thanking all our members for coming every week and being part of it. And it's a place to talk through a lot of yonim. We've done a lot, almost 5 years. Actually, last week's share was with nutrition and health. I got a lot of positive feedback on that. It was a very good topic. A lot of people came, a lot of people listened to it. So we're really just trying to take a lot of important topics and talk through it. So thank you for joining. It's a Sichas Chaverim. Please talk it out. If anyone wants to join our WhatsApp chats, please WhatsApp me at 732-314-1710. And I'll send you the link for the community chats. I'll also going to post it in the Zoom chat as well. Menachem sends out the emails with the links to the WhatsApp community chats where you can see who's speaking, the replays, and all the information. If anyone wants to go to menachemberfeld.com, you can sign up for the weekly emails and all the replays and all that's going on in Coach Menachem land. For all the people that are watching this on YouTube, click on the subscribe button. You can click on the like button as well. And thank you to all the advertising sponsors, Lakewood Scoop here in Lakewood, Ellie and Ariel from 5Town Central, Chaylikow from JCN, posting on Matzev. And again, the time is 9 o'clock every Sunday night. Okay. And again, if anybody's here the first time. So now, let's just confirm, it's always 9 o'clock. And that's the Seder Dvarim. Next week, there's going to be one-time exemption because we have a big world-famous psychologist coming on. His name is Dr. Jacob Hamm, not Jewish. He is a clinical psychologist, and he's like the mumcha of trauma. He is like the king of trauma. And he's going to be coming on. He's on the board of Fresh Start. I'm going to give you this information in a second. He's on the Mount Sinai board of schools and everything. And the topic is going to be called, I'm actually looking up because I just got text from him right now. The topic is going to be called trauma. What is it really, and what does healing look like? So we always use the word, you know, in the Jewish would say trauma, but we use it very lightly. He's the Rosh Hashiva of trauma. So which will be next Thursday night at 8 o'clock. I'll be all over the world. Hopefully my timing works out for me. So we'll see everybody next week at that time. Okay. Tonight's share is 217. We're going to turn it over to our Aaron Noach Fried, the CEO of Let's Get Real, who usually sits right next to me, but because of the snow, he didn't want to get wet, so he said he's going to do it from his house. Aaron Noach, the Gematria for 217.
Shalom Uvrach, everyone, to Zoom share number 217. The nurture heart approach we all strive to give our kids a stable, safe, and secure home, yet often miss the key ingredient for their true success. It may seem very simple, but truth is, it entails a lot of wisdom, which leads us up to tonight's Gematria, 217 equals Kedai Lilmoid Chochma. It is worthwhile to learn this wisdom.
Great Gematria, and I think it's very apropos for tonight. Okay, we're going to turn over to Coach Menachem Bernfeld. Sunday night, snowing. Why are we here?
Amazing. Shkoyach for the Gematria. Beautiful. And I want to welcome David Levy. Really excited to learn a new approach. Amidst Hashem. So, welcome everyone to another Let's Get Real with Coach Menachem and with a lot of Siyata Deshmaya. Hashem should help us. We're doing tonight number 217, Baruch Hashem. And we've had many discussions on Chinuch, different approaches. And we're all here to figure things out, to see how we can make it better, the next generation. We know there are many people that are on a healing journey just from everything they picked up when they grew up, the way they, you know, not to blame anybody, a lot of people don't want to give over. I always mention there are some people that had a great chinuch and they want to do the same to their kids. And then there are those who, they want to do everything the opposite. And that also needs some healing to understand, you know, what's right, what's wrong. What we really need is the balance. To understand what the child needs, understand my triggers, so it doesn't go over, which we'll see tonight. So, Baruch Hashem, there are many, many courses out there, different webinars, self-help books, and people are really searching, trying to figure out. But I think tonight we're going to go a little bit deeper, I believe. Many people, they don't realize, you know, from the outside, or they believe they're doing a great job because they're not really aware of what what they're giving over. Sometimes coming from an anxious parent. And I would say if they're not aware, then they're doing a great job because that's where they are. And when they realize, you know, when we realize we need to change something, then that's the exact, the right time that we have to look out and learn new things. So it's not always easy to pick up. The way we give over to our kids, the way the chinuch, I would ask you, the listener, do you find yourself many times feeling angry? Do you find tension in the house many times? Just being aware that the high energy in the room, that itself can bring some awareness of what's really going on and what's bothering you. Is it what the kid's doing or something else? And sometimes it does go into you know, deeper stuff, triggers that I would call it. But the idea is that the kids, they pick up, you know, we can try and we try our best. So the kids pick up those anxieties, the anger, those energy that we give over. And you might say, if they pick up, then what can I do? Nothing I can do about it. Well, I hear your concern. It doesn't mean you should stop parenting. But the idea is that we're learning. We're learning new things, new ideas. So hopefully, nurtured heart approach, hopefully, is an approach that can work for everyone. But, you know, before we start, many times when you hear these things, when we discuss different emotions, how the child feels, many times it comes up how the adult feels. And the adult doesn't want to hear that. I came to hear what my child needs, what my child feels, but not myself. So I would say it's, you know, listen with an open heart, open mind, and let's see, maybe you can help us with a new approach that we should be able to be mechanech of the next generation of Mitzvah Hashem, so that they should be able to say, the chinuch that I got is amazing, and it's the chinuch that I want to give over. So, Mitzvah Hashem, Shabbat Shalom to Dishmaya, and again, looking forward, David, to tonight's episode of Mitzvah Hashem.
Okay. So let's lay it out. Benachem, beautiful opening. Appreciate it. Okay, the title we called it is The Nurtured Heart Approach, which is a world-famous, you know, parenting approach. Books and a lot of facilitators that teach it to you. We titled it, We All Strive to Give Our Kids a Stable, Safe, and Secure Home, yet often we miss the key ingredient for their true success. I'm going to read David's bio, and then I'm going to give a little... I'll speak first. So happens to be, I got a little bit into this approach recently, and I was actually very impressed with it. And I thought, again, you know, there's a lot of different approaches. You can do one approach, you could switch. You know, time goes on. There's not one answer to everything, but it's good to, you know, it's good to know all the different approaches. And I'm actually taking a facilitator, a woman in Pennsylvania, Mrs. Brownstein. If anybody wants a facilitator as a woman, or you know, wants to learn this, there's a lot of people that give over the knowledge. So I think it's important. And I think that it's a lot to learn from it. So then David happened to email at the same time that we're busy with this. So I said, oh, it's by chance. It's meant to be. So David is very well known in the nurturing heart world as being from the best of the best. So Baruch Hashem is coming on. I'm going to read his bio, and then he's going to open it up. Okay? Dr. David Levy is a child psychologist, CEO of the founder of Transform Parenting and Advanced Nurtured Heart Approach, NHA Trainer. In his private practice with offices in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, Dr. Levy specializes in psychotherapy for children and adolescents struggling with emotional and behavioral challenges. Through his signature Transform Parenting Mentorship Program, Dr. Levy has transformed the lives of hundreds of parents of emotionally intense children, guiding them from chaos to calm and connection in their homes. His expert guidance has also been sought by schools, mental health clinics, where he provides nurtured heart approach training to educators, practitioners, enabling them to create supportive environments that foster social emotional growth, well-being, and academic success for the students and their families. Dr. David Levy, our honor to have you here on Coach Menachem. Please open it up.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me, Coach Menachem and Ashi. What a pleasure working with you guys. Gevaldik. Okay. So I want to open up with the title of the talk. The title of the talk. So Ashi had asked me to come up with different potential titles. And I came up with about six titles. And in his persistent way, he rejected all of them and he came up with his own title. Very nice. And it's Mamish Hashkafa Pratis. Beautiful. Because there's a certain part of that title that really hits it on the head when it comes about what we're going to talk about this evening. That part of the title is that we often, as much as we try our best in our parenting to provide that stable, that safe, secure home, we often miss the boat. We miss the key ingredients for our child's true success. So I want to go a little bit into why, and then I'll go into what that ingredient is. Let's do the why before the what. And this is my theory. Parenting is incredibly hard. It's incredibly hard. Even with generally well-behaved children, it's very, very hard. It's one of the hardest responsibilities that we have. And especially with a child that has real behavioral challenges, real difficulties, defiance, aggression, really intense emotions, meltdowns. It's really hard. Parenting is really hard. And when we are faced with challenges like that, we look to conventional wisdom to help us. So in swoops, traditional methods that are more of behavioral frameworks, in swoops traditional methods, and they're really great marketers. What's a good marketer? A good marketer lays out the problem and then it gives the solution. You're really struggling with challenging behaviors, intense emotions and behaviors. Conventional methods say, here, I'm going to give you these wonderful methods that are going to target the behaviors. They're going to significantly decrease these behaviors, perhaps even eliminate them. Oh, all is good in the world. Problem, solution. Methods like timeouts, methods like reward systems, methods like systematic consequences. These methods, they show good promise. The only problem is that it misses the boat. Not only does it miss the boat, with really intense children, it tends to make things worse. Definitely been my experience and a lot of my colleagues, when we apply just the behavioral methods, the conventional methods, also in my own home, right? They completely fall flat, especially in the face of a very challenging child. So Howard Glasser, in the early 90s, the one who created the nurtured heart approach, pre-nurtured heart, he saw the same thing. He was a family therapist. He saw that with all the kids that he was working with, he would try these behavioral methods. They would only make things worse. Only make things worse. So he decided to take a risk. He took a risk and he decided to do a different kind of marketing. Not a marketing that's going to directly say, I'm going to decrease or eliminate these behaviors. I'm going to do something else. I'm going to hit the nail on the head. I'm going to facilitate change where it really matters. What am I going to do? I'm going to create a whole approach around the following beautiful idea. Building inner wealth. That is the key. That is the key to a child's success. Having their inner wealth built. What does that mean? Building inner wealth means that a child comes into true contact, true ownership of their greatness in very rich and specific ways. They have fully internalized, they embody the very inherent greatness that we know they have, even the most difficult child. They own it, they know it, and they live off of it. And the whole approach has the agenda of helping build a child's inner well. And the framework, the methodology that we use in order to get to this wonderful cultivation of inner wealth, because we need a methodology, it's a beautiful theory, right? But we need a method. We need a method to be able to help a child get there, especially when we're confronted with very difficult behaviors and we know there's greatness in there and we want to just help bring it out, help the child live in their greatness. We need a method. So I will outline the method that we use very briefly, and I'm hoping that throughout our discussion, we'll get deeper and deeper. The method that we use is something called the three stands. Three stands. And we call it a stand because we commit to it. We stand for it. We don't call it the three techniques. We don't call it the three methods. There's three stands because we are trying our best to be able to commit to it. It's also called a stand because if we take one of them away, not going to work as well. It'll fall apart. So we need to dial them all in together. So here are the three stands. The three stands are stand one, absolutely no. I will absolutely not energize negativity. I'm not going to energize that negative behavior with lectures, with emotional reactivity. I'm not going to give my connection to negativity. Stand two is absolutely yes. I will give my wonderful gift of my energy. I'm going to give the gift of me to positivity, to success, to growth, to baby steps of greatness. That's where my energy is going to go. And stand three is absolutely clear. I am going to be absolutely clear on my expectations of you, wonderful child, of the rules crystallized within me and as conveyed to you. What are the rules of the home? And what is the unenergized, consistent consequence every time a line is crossed? And that's the methodology. That's how we get to build inner wealth.
Okay. So before the program, we spoke last week, me, David, and Coach Menachem. And since this is a parenting concept, and for everybody to be asking questions all the time, we're going to be asking questions about understanding the foundation. So we decided first let's build the foundation. So let's say the first 30 so minutes will be just more of a dialogue and questions with David. And we're going to explain the basic concepts. And once we all get the basic concepts, then we'll ask the questions. Because I think if we ask questions without understanding the core principle, again, this is a very much more detailed than what we're doing tonight. We're just laying out the core foundations. And then we can really ask afterwards to understand clearer. Obviously, if you want to really understand the full method, you could reach out to David. There's other facilitators or anybody you want to reach out to, buy the book, show those courses, whatever you want to do. But we just want to lay out the foundation over here. So that's what we're going to do first. So right before we do that, we're going to take polls now. And we're going to see where everybody thinks and holds. And then we'll go through it. Here we go. It's a four-question poll. First question, what behavior issue is the most difficult to address? This is your personal opinion. Like, what do you have the hardest time to deal with? Tantrums, meltdowns, sibling rivalry, screen time limits or any, like, device. I don't use screen time. Just, like, more, like, devices, like, what, yeah, not to use, not to, you know what I mean? Or four, lack of responsibility. A kid is just, like, nobody to talk to with responsibility. First question. Second question. What do you usually do when your child throws a tantrum? So A, stay calm and let them express their emotions. B, try to distract them with something else. C, talk to them and explain them why the behavior is not acceptable. Or D, walk away and give them the space to calm down. There's no right or wrong. This is just like, what do you think you do? Third question. Which of the parenting behaviors do you find most challenging to avoid? When you're dealing with a kid, you have to find it challenging yelling or raising my voice when frustrated, dismissing or ignoring my child's emotions, becoming inconsistent with rules and consequences. You say you're going to do something, but you don't really do it. Option four, projecting my stress onto my child. Or option five, making empty threats and don't follow through. The fourth and final question. Which of the following is the core principle for your current parenting approach? Like what, if you have to like narrow down, like what's your core that you're focusing on? Like if you have to like, I don't know the right word to say, like you're trying to like say like what it is in a nutshell. Punishing negative behavior immediately means the child doesn't behave, we punish him right away. We can't have hefkeres. B, consistently recognizing and celebrating positive behaviors. Anytime a child does something good right away, we focus on that. C, using timeouts for misbehavior. Anytime a child misbehaves, straight to punishment. Or D, following through and making sure the kids know who's in charge. Show them, you're the child, I'm the parent. Which of these do you see? Anybody doesn't see the poll, I can't help you. Okay. So I'm going to give you a few seconds to respond, and then Ellie, we could review it, or we can go straight into the questions, okay? And again, we're trying to lay the foundation for the nurtured heart approach, but we can understand the basic concepts and then really afterwards get into it. Okay, 3 more seconds. Five, four, three, two, one. Here we go. What behavior issue is the most difficult to address? 34% of the parents feel tantrums and meltdowns. The number one answer, 40% of the people, sibling rivalry, fighting between each other. Only 8% have issue with the whole device thing. 18% lack of responsibility. David, any comment on this?
That's what I picked. Sibling, it makes a lot of sense. Sibling, yeah, it's one of the biggest things I would say, that it feels so much out of our control. Two siblings are fighting, and especially when there's a power differential and we feel for one of the other children, it's very difficult. It's very, very difficult sometimes to know how to navigate that. So it makes sense.
Second question. What do you usually do when your child throws a tantrum? 39% of people will stay calm and let them express their emotions. I would love to see these 39% of people watch them do it. 20% of the people try to distract them with something else. 19% talk to them and explain them why the behavior is not acceptable. 22% of people walk away and give them space to calm down. Just interesting, there's a nice percentage on all these methods. Any comment, David? Let's go to the next one.
Let's go to the next one.
Which of the parenting behaviors do you find most challenging to avoid? By far, number one answer, 43%, yelling or raising when frustrated. 14% dismaying or ignoring my child's emotions. 20% being inconsistent with rules and consequences. 15% projecting my stress onto my child. 9% making empty threats and no follow through. Love it.
Oh, you're in the right place. Yeah, that is definitely working on our triggers. That is the most challenging thing, and that is exactly what we're going to talk about tonight. So, beautiful.
The fourth question, which of the following is the core principle of your current parenting approach the way you're doing it now? 11% punishing negative behaviors immediately. 55% of people here are amazing. They consistently recognize and celebrate positive behaviors. 13% using timeouts for misbehavior. 21% following through and making sure the kids know who's in charge.
In the right place. These parents are rocking it. Consistently celebrating kids. Beautiful. NHA, here we go.
Here we go, that's right. Okay, let's get into it now. We're going to start with a few questions. I'll open it up. Okay, David?
Okay, sounds good.
I have a large family, and the approaches I've used in the past only address the child that's struggling, the difficult child, the tantrum child, those child. What ends up happening is my other kids feel neglected and that I'm paying too much attention just to the child who's acting out. Is there another approach, is there another mahalach that will focus not just on that child, but an entire family that will work more in synchrony?
Yes. So, great question. When I was starting out early in my career, when I was using more behavioral approaches, and I would be helping parents work on particular reward systems for their child who's having behavioral difficulties, parents would often say to me, they would often feel somewhat frustrated that, so you're telling me I should start rewarding and I should give all this attention and energy and all these rewards to just the child that is having behavioral problems. Meanwhile, everyone else is looking at this wonderful reward system. They're looking at all this attention, even if they're not having a reward system. But there's a lot of attention in these other methods that is very much solely directed towards the challenging child. What about everyone else? And that's the beautiful thing about the nurtured heart, because while it was an approach that was initially created for intense children, for challenging children, it evolved into an approach for all kids, So first of all, for all children, even well-behaved children, because again, the agenda is building inner wealth. We want to build inner wealth for all, right? So it's for all children, but it's not just for children. It's for adults. So it's been used in marriages. I've had people that parents have come back to me and said, I had such a great day at work. I'm recognizing everyone. I'm celebrating everyone's greatness, right? In a very real way, right? People have been applying this just between each other. And it's not so much just an approach that is directed towards one child as it is just to totally change the culture of the home. It really changes. We're applying this to all our children. It's a system for the home. It's also a system for the self, my relationship with myself. So as we're talking about each one of these stands and elements, you can take the step back and say, well, how can I do this to myself, right? How can I do this to all the people in my life? It's a really beautiful approach like that.
Yeah, let's get to the next point. Sometimes things get really escalated with my intense child, right? Everybody has, you know, some child that's usually like from the harder of the children. Major tantrums, defiance, aggression sometimes. What could I do to control the situation and keep everybody calm?
Oh, okay. So before we get to how do I control the situation, which of course we need tools, we need a method to be able to know what to do during intense situations. But before we get to that, we have to understand intensity. We need to have an understanding of intensity. I didn't think I was going to do this, but I'm going to do this. Let me throw out a question, okay? Throw out a question from whoever wants to answer, which Menachem and Asher, you can answer too. When you think about that intense child, right, or an intense person, you can even close your eyes if you want. You can just imagine in front of you is that intense child or intense adult. What qualities come to mind? As you're thinking about that intense person, what qualities come to your mind?
Anger.
Yeah. What else?
Is that a quality?
Yeah. It doesn't have to be a quality. Quality, behavior. What comes to mind? Much better. What comes to mind when you think about intent? What?
Big doer.
Oh, big doer. Okay.
Passion.
What else?
Somebody wrote Gevura, doesn't give up.
Oh, doesn't give up. So we're amongst people who see the greatness and intensity. Oftentimes, especially when you have a child who is really engaging in really big behaviors, intensity has a bad rap. People often think of things like anger and rigidity and stubbornness and emotional dysregulation, right? Defiance. All those, sometimes those negative behaviors, and sometimes when things can feel chaotic around intensity, right? And sometimes it takes a shift, a mindset shift, to take a step back and say, hey, what about the passion? What about the gvura? Right? As you said, a doer. What else? Float some more positive qualities.
People are writing anxious, strong-minded and strong, hurt,
perseverance,
passionate, sensitive, persistence.
Right. Yeah. Persistence, passionate.
Think very about caring.
Caring. It was interesting. When I was in a Beis Medrash, I think that it's a certain prime of my intensity, right? I'm still intense. I'm a very intense person, right? But I remember back then, I remember certain people would say, you know, David, you're pretty intense person, right? And honestly, you know, it hit me. It hit me a little hard. I don't know if I was ashamed of it, but I definitely didn't see it in a positive light, right? But just through going through the training of this approach and being with it, with parents and living in it, I love my intensity. It is a gift. So sure, you've got positive and negative qualities around intensity, but intensity itself, it is a life force. It is a gift that can cut, that can be the motor, the driver of so much achievement, accomplishment, right? Look at both of you, Menachem and Ashi. Look what you do every week. You're going to tell me you're not intentional. You're going to tell me that intensity isn't the driver, you know, of the achievement of what you've built here, right? The persistence, the diligence, right? To create such a beautiful program for Klal Yisrael. It's beautiful, right? So before we try to manage intensity, we gotta have a certain frame of, well, what am I dealing with here, intensity? Because you see, this approach is, I mean, whether it's this approach or not, kids drink in our perceptions of them. If kids see us as always trying to extinguish their intensity, then they're going to see their intensity as something bad, something to be extinguished, right? We got to love it. Sure, we want to help them channel it in different ways, and sure, it can play out in hard ways. But the intensity itself, we got to appreciate it. So that's step, just number one about intensity. The other thing that we have to be aware of before we start to really get a handle on anything is the natural dynamic that occurs between a parent and a child as a result of some of that intensity. And even if not an intense child, it's a natural dynamic that happens between a parent and a child. And it's a cycle that we can get stuck in. Well, what am I talking about? So I like to give an analogy. Well, I like to give a story. My second to youngest boy, his name is Gavriel. And in his first birthday, it was a very nice party. We threw him a party, got all these nice little gifts. There are two gifts that stand out in my mind, especially with regards to his interaction with these gifts. First gift, I remember he got this amped up baby walker. This souped up baby walker. It wasn't a regular baby walker. It was like this baby walker that had all these different buttons and all these different, all this music that sounded out when you press these buttons and the lights. And it was this awesome animated baby walker. He was running around with his baby walker. All the 7 and 8 year old kids were running around with his baby walker. He was having a time of his life, right? And then I remember a couple of minutes later, someone else wanted to give him a gift. So we took him here. Check this out. Person gives, let's say this is it. Baby book. A baby book to him for us to read to him. Very nice. I remember his reaction when he took the baby book after he was busy with the baby walker. He took the baby book. He went like this. Went right back to the baby walker. Kids love connectivity. They love reactivity. They love that animated response. And we can be our child's most favorite toy. We have so many buttons they can press. We light up in so many wonderful ways. We have a way of singing music that just draws them in. We can be that toy. And given conventional methods, we are that toy. We are that toy mostly around their problems, even with the best intentions. And this also comes from our own greatness to want to deal with problems and want to problem solve, and also being human beings and getting triggered. We are that animated toy. We are most connected with our children around when things are not doing well. And when things are doing well, we appreciate that. And we might give a child a good job, a well done. But we are so boring. We are so boring when kids are doing well as compared to when they're not. Kids, think about what the child goes through. Kids experience so much connection, so much love around their problems. So it's no wonder that cycle just stays. The behaviors are, They perpetuate. Because who wants to learn about an emotional regulation skill if that's going to get me out of my connection? I want to stay connected to you wonderful parents. So what the nurtured heart does, the way that we handle all the chaos, is we start by disrupting the cycle. What stand one and stand two is they start, we disrupt the cycle.
So what I hear you saying is that when the child is very young, when they're very young, they realize, how am I going to get some connection with my parents? How am I going to get their attention? How am I going to get them? Just by sitting on the side and playing nicely, they're just going to make supper, go to work, or they're not going to look at me. So I'll go and pull their pants and make them crazy so that I should be connected.
So, yeah, I mean, how does it start? How does it start, you're asking?
No, we don't have to go into the detail. Just the basic concept. Soon we'll do more. But the idea is the child wants connection. And this method is going to teach us how to connect to the child from a positive place so that it doesn't have to ask for the negative interaction.
Oh, exactly.
Just that will take us to a question of, if somebody's really, really having a hard time with, the child is not behaving and, one child hurts another child. Right? So I'm saying the question is, that we are in the middle of a negative, and you're saying we're not going to give no energizing negativity. We're not, right? Like you said, it's a stand. We're not going to give them attention when there's negative activity. We have to.
Oh, right. Oh, beautiful. Okay, so that's good. So you said a very good telling word there. We're not going to give attention. We're not going to give attention, but we have to. We have to intervene. Oh, so let me clarify one thing. It's not that we're not going to give attention. So if we wouldn't be giving attention, that would be called ignoring. I'm going to completely ignore. And you see that sometimes in conventional methods. Ignore the negative behavior. Ignore it. That is not what we're doing. That's not what we hold. That's not what we're doing in NHA. We're not ignoring. We're actually remaining ever present. We're very present. We're just not energizing. What does that mean? Not energizing. Well, kind of the flip side, if we're not energizing, it's really the flip side of what we would do otherwise if things are going well. We're pausing the energy flow. Right, we embody this connected experience with our child when things are going well, but when things are not going well, we pause. It's like we put ourselves on pause. We pause that connectedness. I may still have to intervene, especially for safety, or for whatever. Of course, I'll have to intervene, but I am gonna pause my connectedness, right? My reactivity, I'm pausing that energy flow so I don't give that gift. They want my gift. I don't want to give that gift. I'm not giving you my gift now. You'll get it like the other 98% of the time when you're doing well, because you will be doing well. You will be doing well, right? But I'm going to pause it just for that moment. All the while that you just forgot how great you are. As soon as you remember, boom, I'm right back on. Now, just a note about stand one and not energizing. It's very easy to say don't energize negativity. But like we saw in the polls, that's a really great thing we came out with. It's one of the hardest parts about parenting, right? We saw in the polls, one of the hardest parts about parenting is handling our own triggers, right? Handling what sometimes feels like the chaos within. Our children bring up all sorts of things for us. All sorts of things, right? Things that are just kind of in the here and now, triggers in the here and now. You want the child to listen, he's not listening. but also very much they can draw, bring up things from my own childhood. They can bring, just by behaving in like kid-like ways,
Kol
not
ha-lashon.
Listening, right? Screaming. But if we had either trauma in our backgrounds or there are certain ways that we were treated that it hits on that wound, right? So then we're grappling with that. So we're grappling with our own emotions. We're grappling with sometimes what feels like the dysregulation in the moment. So it's very easy to say, don't energize. Don't energize. So I'll ask you one better, Menachem. If you're intervening, how do I not energize? Right? The answer is obviously we're not perfect. And this system, wonderful method, beautiful method, does not require perfection, right? It requires us to try our best. But the beautiful thing about this approach is that built into the methodology is us working on ourselves. Built into stand one is us working on our own intensities when things are rough. What am I doing? We always ask ourselves in the heat of the moment, what should I do to the child? Not what should I do to the child? What should I do to me in the heat of the moment? What am I doing? What am I doing to me? Right? How am I understanding me? How am I understanding my triggers? Where is this coming from? What are the underlying feelings that are coming out underneath the anger? When my child doesn't listen to me or throws a tantrum right? What's happening within me and how can I get to a place where I cannot energize, right? So
let's make it more practical. Let's say the child is hurting a sibling and right away you feel your own energy coming up and you mentioned that you need to pause. So maybe you can explain how do we actually pause and what do we do? How does it work? Maybe we can play it out.
Sure. Yes. We'll need a little bit, we'll need a little bit of, the rest of the methodology, but working with what we have now. Let's see where that goes, right? See, we're all about just the truth of the moment, letting it evolve. So we can.
Let's understand what does it mean to pause and not to energize.
Right. Yeah, sure. So sibling rival, it's hard. And if there's real aggression, we need to intervene. But one of the things that we have to do is we have to be able, and sometimes this takes work on our end and sometimes we'll fall down. We need to fall down before we can have that awareness of what does this do to me when one of my kids is fighting with it. Another one of my kids, what is this bringing up for me? Sometimes it takes getting frustrated, losing it a little bit because we're not human we're human, right? To be able to reflect afterwards, say, well, so what does this bring up? When you have the awareness, it can bring up all sorts of things, right? It could bring up a loss of control of I want to defend from my child and all sorts of things that can be tailored to each individual. But pausing means is just to focus. First, if you can, you focus on the self, focus on your own energy, right? When you see that second, notice where are you in your body right now? Where are you feeling in your body, right? Is the heart beating fast? Am I feeling fiery in my face, right? What am I feeling right now? Take that deep breath or whatever it is.
That's what you mean by pause, that the person, that the adult, the parent should pause for a moment. Before they intervene, they should pause so that they don't spill over their energy on the child.
Yeah. You do what you need to do. Exactly. You pause. You do what you need to. Well, you're doing two things during that pause, right? You're doing two things. Number one, like what you're saying, Menachem, you're working on your own regulation. Right? You're working on your own regulation. And the pausing is serving, it's serving another purpose. It's waiting, so to speak. Now, it's waiting for that first moment when they can come back into their greatness. Now, in terms of intervening, let's say with a child that is hitting another child. So in that moment, you may have to intervene. So you're regulating, right? But you're not totally checking out. You're not completely checking out. and missing the moment for them to come back in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess we'll continue to get the method and then we'll get questions.
Yeah.
Okay. So David, I want to bring up this point. So obviously one of the things we discussed a little bit is like really focusing on the positive of the kid, right? The positive traits, right?
Yeah.
It's one of these. Okay. I just want to clarify we're talking about different concepts over here. We're not really actually explaining nurtured heart, how it actually plays out. We're explaining the concepts of not putting energy into the negative. We're discussing a little bit of focusing on the positive, what that means. We're not clarifying yet. And we have to discuss actually how it works out, but that will go as the conversation goes. So the point that we want to discuss now a little bit is focusing on the kid's positive traits and like really, how do we do that, right? The kid is fighting and screaming. Look at his beautiful aggression. He's such a powerhouse, that kid. Look at him. He gets so shut down because he's so sensitive. He's such a beautiful neshama, right? But not saying that to fakif ourselves to believe something that's not true. It's really to believe it because at the end of the day, it is true. At the end of the day, I mean, we say this with all struggling kids and all the programs we had is that they're usually the most highly sensitive child. They usually have the biggest neshama. They're usually the most talented. They usually like, they have this whole big bracha that Hashem gives them. But as a kid, it's very hard to deal with because you want everything to be on autopilot. You want the kid that just wakes up, goes to school, gets 100, comes home, goes to sleep at 8 o'clock on time. So point is when a kid focusing on those milas, whether he's or just or general milas. So problem is when anytime I try to turn to my kid and say, oh, by the way, I'm so proud of you. You have so much passion. I see that you're really dedicated to this homework or wow, I know you're sad or you got so upset about your sister because you're so sensitive. Recognize anything positive, but right away they get upset. They hate praise. It like bothers them, makes them feel embarrassed. So, and they push back and they get angry. So how do I praise my kids? Like, explain it to me first of all, what the concept is of just like praising your kid. What does it mean? And what do you do when your kid just doesn't like it?
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Okay. Yes. So stand two. So praise. So let's talk about praise. Let's talk about praise because we actually move to a different word. We move. See, we're all about challenging kind of conventional ideas and making some movements. So first thing we want to do is we want to ask ourselves, this is something that I constantly ask, parents, why do we praise? Why do we do it? And what are your thoughts? You know, perhaps people in the chat or Menachem or Ashi, like what's your understanding? Why do we praise children? What's the purpose?
You want to build them? You want to...
So people text the chat. Why do you think we praise our children?
You want them to know what's right and what's wrong?
Some person says to help them see their greatness, to grow that behavior. They don't know who they are yet. We're teaching them.
Mm. Okay. Okay, beautiful.
Show them that we like them. Show them that we like them. Let them know we are noticed. I'll let them know that we notice them for self-esteem, build confidence. So that's why we compliment our kids. Build self-confidence and encourage growth. Empathy. Put it into your bank account. All the famous book words. Self-worth. Anybody, you know, if you chat GPT, give me all the book words for why we do compliments to our kids. Acknowledge the support system. I give compliments to my kids because I expect that they'll just, you know, do whatever I say. If I say, oh, you're such a good boy. Okay, great. I'll go to sleep now. Brings more positive behaviors.
Right.
Fellow humanity. Yeah.
Beautiful. And these are beautiful answers. The two most common answers, have definitely been said over within the chat, are to grow the behaviors, to increase those positive behaviors, right? And to increase self-esteem. And we like to be a little more specific and we like to be a little more goal oriented when we, to align it with what this is really all about. This is all about building inner wealth. So Menachem, when you said to build them, right? What does that mean? To build them and send other people noted it also, right? We praise children to create for internalization. We praise children to help them internalize what we are praising them about. We want a child to see themselves as that great kid. This is a gift for them. This is not for us. Not for us. It's not for us to get more behaviors or, and the self-esteem comes from saying, hey, we can totally reframe how they see themselves, right? And oftentimes, so to your question, right? To your question, actually about kids that push back on praise. Well, sometimes kids push back on praise because it's vague. See, if we're vague with our praise, good job, well done, very, very defensive children will throw that right back in our face. Good job? Like what exactly did I do good? Like, I didn't do anything good. Right? Stop saying that. Right? Throw it right back in our face, it'll fall flat. And even for the kids that may like it, we call that junk food. It's junk food, temporary, nice feeling. It's not food of nutritional value, right? What we want to do with energizing, when we talk about energizing success, so it starts with appreciation, right? Like Usha, you noted this. I really do appreciate exactly what I'm seeing. I appreciate the quality, the beauty of that self-control, of that respect, of that kindness. And then out from that appreciation manifests the words, the very specific way of saying, hey, look, Ashi, Menachem, you guys have. So the timing of this used to be at 10. Is that right? Or like later?
Have enough time.
No. I'm trying to make a point. You made this early. I mean, you have now made, you have a new time.
From 9:30 to 9.
Right. So you do this every single, I was thinking about this before, every single Sunday night. And we're just every Sunday night. No Sunday nights. No, other than you both coming on here, right? Doing this for Klal Yisrael, having people on. And now it's even earlier, right? He's not even going. It's not starting later in tonight. You have what?
He's not even listening. No, I'm just joking.
Nice. He'll get it on the recording.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Right. It's true.
My kid was here, and I had to focus on my kid, and I had to give him a positive compliment. I said, "I'm so impressed that you didn't go to sleep on time and that you're up late making noise because you're so dedicated."
Right. Look at that. Taking it in.
I'm talking about any of the thing. When you learn the terminology and how to use this properly, it's a tool. It's really a language. It's cute that it's for children, and that's where it's practiced. But you could use it with your spouse. And actually, Shabbos people were talking to me about nurtured heart. And I went around the table, gave everybody a nurtured heart compliment the way I was taught. And every single person, even though they knew I was disingenuous and I was doing it to show a point, after I said the compliment, I said, "How do you feel inside? Be honest." And each person said, "It actually made me feel very good."
But the goal is to be generous.
Right. But I'm saying, I was just giving them an example. I told one person, like, she was a girl. She was like, "This is all stupid, whatever." I was like, "I see that you're a really caring 20-year-old girl who really helps her siblings, and you're so amazing. And I just want to let you know that shows me about you that you're going to be an amazing wife." And I said, "How does that make you feel?" She was like, "It actually makes me feel really good." I was like, "See?"
Yeah, people want to be seen. They want to feel appreciated. I remember
we're focusing the whole nurture is focused on kids, but it's really a language of what it is. And again, after the question, when we get to the quite live question, we can get more into how more technically it works.
Yeah. I mean, if you'd want to know, like, just, you know, what are we doing when we're recognizing someone? It's very simple. I mean, we have techniques, but even above the techniques, you know, you just look. You look at the person. What do you see? What do you see? Who's in front of you? What's happening? What's not happening? Right? What is whatever happening or not happening? What does it say about this person? What does it say about this person? What?
There's no time today. Parents are busy. People are busy. Everybody's catching the train. There's really no time to just look at someone and just see somebody.
Oh.
I'm just bringing it out.
The pause, Menachem, right? Exactly. That's what you said before. The pause. We're all about pausing. Pausing. We're pausing in stand one, right? We're pausing when we're not energizing amidst the chaos. But you're right. This, I tell parents all the time, this is a very mindfulness-based approach, right? mindfulness, right? We're present. We stop, reflect, take a snapshot, right? And it really does. It helps us become ever more present with our children.
Amazing.
Okay, so let's get to the next question over here. So now talking about emotional regulation, right? And building inner wealth. Where does discipline come in? Well, Maisa, how do you address difficult behavior? At the end of the day, right, we're talking about emotional regulation, but Maisa, discipline. We have to be mechanic kids. How does that work? How does that play in?
People love discipline.
Yeah.
Kids have to know that the parents are in charge. Kids have to know there's a schedule. Parents have to know this. Parents have to know that. Kids have to know. And I'm making fun of it, but the truth is, it is true. At the end of the day, kids have to know who's in charge, right? You can't be with your 12-year-old kid, your best buddy, and let's chill. And time to go to sleep. He's like, oh, you're staying up, let's chill. You know what I mean? There is discipline. So how does that play out with the nurturing heart approach, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah. Of course, yes. It can't all be about, just complementing recognition, although that's the core, facilitator of change. We need to be able to intervene effectively, with challenging behaviors, and discipline is very much needed for children. Children need that. And that's really what stand three, encompasses. The first thing I would say is that it is very important to build the foundation first, right? Discipline is important. It's so important though to build the foundation first. The foundation to stand three is stands one and two. I mean, the foundation to discipline is creating the kind of relationship with my child where I am number one working on myself during those intense moments, so I don't energize that negativity. And number two, so that I'm creating a beautiful time in, so to speak, a juicy and connected time in. That's very, very, very important for disciplining, right? I would say that the first thing to keep in mind when we think about clarity and about structure is clarity in the rules, right? We need clear rules. Kids need clear rules. It's so important. Clarity is so important. Kids need to know what's expected of them. We need to know where are we drawing the lines, right? Where are we drawing the lines? And kids need to know that, right? So the rules need to be clear. Now, it's also very important to note that we also have to have our values clear. Rules without values, if we just have a bunch of rules, right, in a household, especially the very intense child is just going to see that as another form of manipulation, right? Meaning, why are you telling me I shouldn't do this, right? Why can't I do this? The rules need to be backed by things that we value as a family, whether it's respect, it's kindness, something Torah-based, you know, some quality that we stand for as a family. We got to get our values straight. We got to model them, right, as best as we can, communicate them to our child, and then manifesting from the values are rules. And once we have those values, we want to formulate the rules. Rules, right, we love the word no. We love the word no. And we're a very positive approach. We're a very positive approach, but we love clarity. So we love the word no as much as we can do that before each rule. No. No hitting. No throwing chairs across the room. No eating in your bedroom, right? No, whatever rule we want to have, we want to draw the line very, very clearly. We want to have clarity, as to where the lines are drawn. We want kids to know that. When we do that, it's a huge asset in terms of celebrating kids when they're not breaking a rule. Great. Some parents, they come to me. They come to the nurture heart approach because they want that nurturing approach. What are you giving me all these? You're saying I should do all these rules. We compile a list of like 10 different rules. Rules. I want to make my home into a boot camp. Oh no, it's beautiful. You have all the rules and then you can, by having the rules clear to us, so easy to identify when they're not breaking a rule. And there's more energy, more connection, rules beget more connection. And, so that's a point on rules. So that's the first step.
I think there's more clarity for the adult. You know, when you have your values and the rules are very clear, there are clear no's, and you're taking to the next step that if you know when they don't break the rules, you can jump from excitement and connect from a positive place.
Yes, 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 yes. And, I love that. I love that, Menachem. You can jump. You can jump.
Excitement.
Yes.
A lot of people out there are probably thinking, yeah, it's a very nice theory. Okay. At the end of the day, how in the world? But before we go to any large questions, I'm just thinking, you know, the question is when at the end of the day, there's a rule, they break the rules. So there has to be some consequences. How does that work?
Oh, okay, fine. So consequences. So consequences are very important. We have a very novel way of implementing consequences. We're not going to take a deep, deep dive into that. It's beyond the scope of our talk here to take a deep dive, but I definitely want to give some clarity around how we understand consequences. You know, people often ask, they ask about the conventional method of timeout. And if there's any room for timeout within the nurtured heart, right? Is there a place for timeout? Sometimes parents they're used to giving that as a consequence. You break a rule, you go into timeout. Can we do that here? And the question becomes like, what's really the definition of timeout? I mean, what does timeout really mean? Timeout is really just a loss of time in. It's a loss of that privilege of being around everyone else. We're losing a privilege. If you think about any consequence that you want to give, you want to take favorite toy away, losing a privilege, you want to have a child go to bed early, you're losing that time you would have had before. You know, if you would have been awake, even if you give a child, you tell a child to do a chore, they're losing out on being able to have that special time they could have used if they wouldn't have done the chore. Either way you slice it, you can't really escape this loss of a privilege. If you want to give a consequence, you can't really escape time out. So you see, in the nurtured heart, what we do is we do come out with some kind of version of timeouts, right? But we have to make it effective. We got to make it effective, right? Because if we don't make it effective, so you see, time out pre-nurtured heart often fails. It fails. It fails because of one of two energetic reasons. When we're delivering the timeouts, we're often energizing negativity. Go to timeout, go to your room, right? When we give that consequence, especially when it comes to timeout, we energize, we're giving connection at the very moment when we want to de-escalate things. And the other reason why timeouts often fail is because there's not much of a time in. There's not much of a time in. Now, we haven't yet set up the juice, the connectedness around when things are going well, for time out to have an impact, to have a felt impact, right? So we want a juicy time in, that connectedness, that stand to, it's incredibly important for the impactful time out, right? And time out, yeah, we're going to have a version. We do use a version as a consequence, right? It's very, very clear. I like to give an analogy and talk to the out of bounds lines in a basketball game, right? One of the things that makes you ever go to a game, one of the things that makes basketball, really any, lots of sports for that matter. Let's talk about basketball for a moment. One of the things that makes basketball very organized are the straight out of bounds lines. Goes out of bounds, it's the other player's ball. Simple, right? Just imagine for a moment that those out of bounds lines would be zigzag, big zigzag lines. Chaos. Every time the ball would go near the out of bounds line, nobody would really know. Is it out of bounds, inbounds? The referees wouldn't know. They'd be confused. The players would test the limits, right? What's going on? The fans would be frustrated. We like straight out of bounds lines. A toe over the line is a toe over the line. A A little bit of cursing is cursing, right? A little bit of a broken rule is a broken rule, right? And there are no warnings. We don't give warnings. You know what warnings do? Warnings serve, the purpose they serve is to just get us more frustrated that I had to tell you 10 times not to do the same exact thing. Warnings don't serve anyone. They devalue the rule, right? So we don't like warnings. We like clarity, right? Perfection is never required. Kids can break rules, right? Just know there's going to be a reset every time a rule is broken. That's what we do. We do something called the reset. Reset is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to unplug, for us to unplug. Unplug for a moment. That pause, right? That pause to unplug in that moment from the child. Help to give the opportunity for the child to make that better choice, right? And then we're right back, and then the child's right back in the game.
Right? What does it look like?
Oh, so that's beyond the scope, right? That's beyond the scope, right? The reset, right? So the reset is, it takes some time to really have the background, to be able to really go into that in terms of having the backing of stand one and stand two.
But it's not sending the child to their room, like timeouts.
Right, exactly. What we're doing is we are pausing. The child could be in the room. The rule is being broken, and it lasts all the while the rule is being broken. And then in a moment, once the rule is not being broken, back in the game, we're back into to the world of connection, right? And to that end, we're building inner wealth.
David, can you tell me how that looks like, what it sounds like?
I'm sorry?
Can you tell me how that looks or sounds like?
So the reset, we're not going to take the deep dive into exactly how the reset looks like, right? Because the reset, in order to really appreciate the reset, right, we really have to have the backing of stand one, stand two. We have to have more of an in-depth backing of both of those stands. And it's a little beyond the scope to go in detail into the reset, right? But what we're basically doing, right, is we're in the moments when a rule is broke, once we have the rules clear, right? The rules are clear. We have the nose very, very clear. What we're doing is when the rule is broken, we're simply using a word, like the word reset, we're using a word, right? And what we're doing in that moment is we're unplugging and we're giving an opportunity for the child to just make the better choice. Right? We're not focusing so much on the child not breaking a rule. In that moment, the consequence is now there's a loss of the connection. Right? And in that moment, that's the child's beautiful choice that we value. Right? The choice to be able to say, hey, I can use this moment, right, to control myself, to stop doing what I was doing before, whatever it is that's happening. But in that moment, we value the beautiful choice of the child.
So you're saying clear boundaries, clear rules, and clear consequences. I'm saying the consequence that you used was being reset, but is that the only consequence, or there are different ones?
That's it.
It's only one.
That's it. Yeah, that's it.
So it's clear. So it's a very clear system. Once somebody gets it, all the energy can calm down, and you can use the positive energy. Good child. I do want to ask you, when you say time in, does that mean I need to be with my child, 24/7 with the positives? I could do it for 10 minutes, but to be constantly, with they're behaving, they're doing well, am I supposed to tell them the whole time? And is the time in the whole time?
So listen, we have lives and we're busy, what we're trying to do, like we have to live and we need time for ourselves, right? We're trying to remain present and seek out authentic moments when we see our child's greatness, right? Does that mean that we have to be on our kid all seconds that we're with them to celebrate and praise? Then you're going to get pushback, right? Then you can get pushed back. We want to, the key to this, the, you're asking a question of like, in terms of like the how to, what should I do in terms of how much time should I spend on this? And that's good. The first question, the first thing we're working on is that awareness and that appreciation that we're experiencing of the child. How aware am I of their greatness? How aware am I of my child at any given moment? And when I see that, it'll come naturally, right? When I see that and I'm, it's a practice of appreciation. It doesn't have to be 24/7, but hey, you know, when we see it, we call it out, and we can create those moments as well.
Okay, so I think we should.
One second. Let's see if we have a live question here. On mute. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Baruch Hashem, good. Question. So I have 4 kids. Okay. Number two, three, and four. An 8-year-old that has her challenges. I would say she is challenge child, sort of to say. Emotional dysregulation. She has her, developmentally delayed. My second child, 6-year-old, very shrewd, smart. And then my toddler. I feel very much that my 6-year-old is sort of, we call it the sandwich child, right? By giving a lot of attention to my 8-year-old that needs continuous for her issues and her stuff. And of course the 2-year-old toddler always getting her attention, I feel like she's like falling out. I've in the past 2-3 months tried to focus very much on her, to give her a lot of positive reinforcement, positive feedback on the great things she's doing and everything. But I'm seeing a certain pattern in her, like every 2-3 or maybe every 4 weeks, that she falls into a certain behavior for like 3-4 days, that she becomes like, she'll be crying and throwing tantrums for every little thing. And I'm like, my question is like, how can I figure out what is it that's bothering her and how am I approaching this?
Okay. So this is the middle child, correct?
Right. Correct.
Right. So, you know, listen, it's hard to say. I don't know exactly the dynamics going on, but you're doing a beautiful job in terms of showing up for your child, for that middle child, in terms of energizing her and giving her, the nurturing that she needs. I would create a space. She's 6. I'm not sure how verbal she is. Is she able to talk a little bit about what's going on for her?
A little bit. I encourage it a lot. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, how often would you say is it happening? Meaning, is it happening for 4 days, and how often has that happened so far?
I would say about every 3 to 4 weeks.
Right. Okay. I mean, I would create the space for her to express the emotionality, and to foster that conversation as much as I can. I would create that space. And, you know, when I'm thinking about how to deal, with intense emotionality, I take a step back and I see how can I use, one of the things that I use with regards to this approach, is seeing how can I use the 3 stands to really help foster better, you know, more expressiveness, and awareness of what's going on. So I'm looking at my own awareness and what this is bringing up for me. And I'm looking at energizing her, capacity for expressing things, in a way where it's not just through tantruming, it's through just being honest and being brave about telling her, you know, there's a lot of feeling. There could potentially be, a lot of vulnerable feelings underneath all these tantrums. So as much as I can energize her and appreciate her for being open with her, how she vulnerable, how she, those vulnerable feelings in terms of how she feels if it comes up and she feels like, I want to spend more time with mommy. You know, you always spend time with the other. As much as she does that, I would energize that and I would appreciate, thank you so much for being honest and thank you so much for being open. And I so want to talk to you about this and we're here for you. So I would energize a lot of honest, open communication around it.
Mm. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
What do you do when the child is a little bit younger? So there's no real communication. It's more your presence.
Yeah. So we can show compassion and show openness and show presence without even having a verbal conversation, just by being there. That's what's beautiful. What's beautiful about this, you know, this method is it is really about our energy, right? And kids, even from a very young age, can sense when we are checking out from their tantrum. And when children are tantruming, and we need to leave or we just check out emotionally, kids sense that. So we have to be somewhat of a, what we call a holding environment, for the child by remaining present, being able to kind of contain the very intense emotions that they're experiencing and just being present, just allowing, listen, we have to intervene when they're taking, you know, a chair and throwing it across the room. But in terms of just being present for the emotional upheaval without majorly energized, without you know, putting a lot of energy into it, but being present for it, so a kid feels that presence.
Let's go to the next live question, David. You're on.
Oh, me?
Yep.
Oh, awesome. Hello, David.
Hello, how you doing?
Doing well. So my question is, if there are no punishments beyond the reset, so, and I don't mean to like paint kids as like exploitative creatures. Like obviously they're not, but children, they kind of, to a large degree, like any other human, like they have self-interest in mind and they like to get stuff. And so what's like, why would a child who's like smart not exploit the system, right? So like even just to use a dumb example, obviously there are more serious examples, but just to illustrate, like, let's say a kid knows that like, if I can grab as many cookies as I can when I'm not allowed to, the only punishment is going to be reset.
And if I'm sorry, I have to stop you. I'm not going to go in depth into how we deal with consequences in this talk. It's beyond the scope of in order to, and I do appreciate the question because, you know, children are smart. And we want to figure out how to deal with smart kids and how to have a system that is not going to be taken advantage of. So you're being thoughtful. And your question is likely very, very good. My concern, my fear of really going in depth into how we do consequences is that because we haven't done the full, you know, it really takes a full training, the full stand one and a full stand two. The reset is just, it's not gonna land fully for you. Not gonna land, it lands fully once you really have down stand one and stand two. So that's my rule, and I appreciate your patience and tolerance of me.
Totally. Thank you.
Sure.
I wanna go to the next live question, but I just wanna get a little bit into the topic because it's a big topic in Nurtured Heart is really what a compliment is. What does it mean focus on a kid? Can we get a little bit into that? Like, I think there's a big chachma in that. And it's very nice to compliment a kid, but I think Nurtured Heart, one of the biggest chachmas is how to give a compliment. Now, this is, we could say for a kid, I mean, I use it for adults. I think it's amazing. Reb Dov, do you want to explain?
So are you saying, just distill it again into a question.
The question is that we're saying that we want to focus on the kids' positive traits, right? We want to build up their inner wealth. But there's not just like, oh, you're doing great, you're doing amazing yeshiva. There's a way how to give the compliment. There's a way how to focus that the kid hears you, right? When I tell my kid, you're doing great, he's like, okay, thank you, Doc. what's the nurture heart approach with really focusing on the kid to give them that proper inner wealth?
Yes. So what
I want to get a little bit to that chachma because I think it's a brilliant concept.
Yeah, of course. Because that is what we're trying to, build inner wealth. And the question is how we get there.
I think everybody listening thinks that means when your kid's doing homework, they say, oh, you're doing great at homework. Amazing. I'm so proud of you. Like, there's a much deeper level of that.
Yes. Let me say it like this. We want to be able to teach our children, right? We want to teach them important values, important life skills. We want to be able to teach them these things. And we end up doing that normally. We end up doing that when they're doing the wrong thing. We want to right the wrong. We want to teach them what to do when they're not doing it. You know, what we're doing when we are recognizing, and that's the shift that we make. We make a shift from praise to recognition, right? We're trying to do here is we're trying to help a child feel recognized for their greatness.
That's right. I'm going to cut in. I just want to say a few things. Sorry, David, we're going to be upset. But one of the things that I said when I was doing this is that we give big percentage of a chinuch when the kid is not behaving. That's like really our go-to. I'm saying for me at least, right? Kid, everything's good. Oh, I'm so amazing. You give him a knip, everything is on autopilot. When the kid doesn't behave, doesn't scream, when he doesn't do his homework, when he doesn't do this, we put all our energy when they're not behaving. So anytime the child gets a rise out of us is during the negative behavior most of the time. The positive is when they're doing good, we'll turn to them sometimes and say, oh, I'm so proud of you. We'll give that which to me was always a very basic compliment. Like, what else were you supposed to say? So I think that's a big point that we want to make here is that we're putting so much energy in the negative because that is the time when we're mechanach, right? When the kid hits his brother, we tell him, don't hit. We don't tell him when he doesn't not hit his brother, wow, I'm so proud of you, you didn't hit him. Because that's not the way. We don't compliment when they're not doing something bad.
Right, and we're not supposed to compliment at those times.
Correct.
Right? And you're right. Given just normal ways of parenting and being, we want to be mechanach our kids. And just given normal methods, we're showing up then the most when they're not doing the right thing to guide them, right?
So if my father is busy working or my father's busy on his phone or my father's busy learning, and the only way I get my father's attention is when I break something in the house, I want that connection subconsciously. So I'm going to make sure to press all those fancy toys with all those buttons and piss him off so I can get my father to come home early from learning because the mother's calling him that he's really disbehaving. And then I can get that drive from my father.
Right.
So the problem is we're saying don't engage in the negative behaviors. So everybody's having a hard time with that because your kid's not behaving. Like you have to do something. It's nice to say don't put in energy. So that's the clarity that we're training for. And then also back to the compliments. What does a compliment mean to nurture heart?
Right. So at the root of a compliment is appreciation. We actually appreciate the child in the moment. In the moment. Like if I were just to appreciate you, Ashi, right now, I would appreciate your thoughtfulness, your weaving through your own understanding of the nurtured heart in your own coaching and the thoughtfulness that you're giving over and trying to make me make it clear to everyone else and your dedication to try to get this out there and clear your sense of clarity. That's just real appreciation. In the moment that I didn't have to think too much about before. So the chachma of recognition, right, is backed by the actual appreciation that we have in the moments of what we see. Now, how that manifests verbally, sure, right? So we note, you know, what we see, right? Look at what I see. I see you listening here. Right? Reflecting what I'm saying and also making sure that I'm getting across, you know, the really important points, you know, of the nurtured heart that you want to also make sure get out here, right? That shows thoughtfulness and dedication to the cloud, right? So I appreciate that about you, right? I appreciate that, right? So it's noting what I see, noting the qualities, the midos that you have, right? The more I appreciate you, and that's manifested from the words that I say, the more you're going to appreciate yourself, right? Right? The more that a child ends up appreciating themselves, Right? That's,
that's
the
why the shir is called building inner wealth. How do you make it most valuable? Because we're trying to build our self-confidence with the inner wealth, which doesn't mean, you know, I want to give my kid a safe, secure, loving home, and all that. Everybody wants to do that. We all do that. But sometimes the reason why they're missing it is because at the end of the day, the kid needs to feel good about himself. So what we're trying to get at over here is that if we focus on the negative behaviors, obviously we need to take care of them, but we're only mostly focusing on the negative because that's when we get involved. If it's not negative, we don't really get so involved.
Right. And again, and the other, a very important akuta that's coming out from here also, actually, is this idea of it's not just about a child feeling good about themselves. It's about a child really having a deep appreciation for him or herself.
Right?
I appreciate me. Which kid appreciates me? I appreciate me. And we want children to.
We always say this famous thing in chinuch. Like we always say this. If you always say, "Oh, you're so," you really show your kid that you believe he's certain thing. I believe you're so smart. I believe you're so talented because you could build a thing. You're going to be an architect, right? If you put that in your kid over and over again, they actually believe they could do that, right? Because you're building that inner wealth. Because you're pushing that kid in a way. So we're not saying to make up stuff. We're saying take their miles and show them their miles they have and give it to them on a silver platter.
Right. Exactly. We're not making up anything. Right. And we're not pushing any agenda other than the agenda of helping them see their greatness. Right. And sometimes it is in small doses, right? Sometimes, you know, if we feel like, oh, we're going full force, we want to energize, and the kid's like, whoa, you know, we could scale back a little bit, right? We can, not too much, right? Because we have to be fierce. We have to be fierce with our, you know, with the energy and with, and with the knowing that this child, is going to appreciate their greatness, right? But yes, that's what it's about, right? The wealth within.
Sometimes by mentioning in a subtle way, especially those kids who are going to run away when you come at them full force. Sometimes just saying, "I really appreciate it when you did that. That was amazing." Just saying it in a subtle way and walking away, not really looking at them, focusing on them, sometimes can go in. You know, my mother, you know, she's, you know, it's not something that's verbalized. It's just agav.
It's beautiful. It's not just agav. It's the energy. It's the energy that you get, right?
Not the words. It's that feeling.
Yes. It's that presence. It's that connectedness. That's beyond words.
I think that's something that we need to talk a little bit more about to understand that, you know, what are we looking for? The child should feel just by being next to the adult, being in the same room, that they appreciate your presence.
Yes. Just appreciate, you appreciate the me that I'm seen, that I'm feeling heard and seen. Yes.
Okay, let's just kind of do a little recap and make sure we're on the same page, and then before we get into the, because I wanted to get into the compliment part, if that's okay. Dub, is that okay?
Oh, yeah, sure. So what would you like me to do?
No, so I'm just going to understand what we said, and then I want to move into the compliment part. I feel it's a very big part.
Sure, yeah. So you're going
to... Basically, what we're saying is that we want to focus not on the negative behaviors. We want to try to avoid them as much as possible. For that, we're not really explaining the details like when a kid. Obviously, you got to do what you got to do. But I think that what you're trying to say is, let's not make it a tug of war and back and forth and fighting and make it like pushing every button. Obviously, if a kid's hitting a kid, you have to pick the kid up, move them to the side. There's things you have to do as a parent, right? But then there's when the kid is misbehaving where you're like fighting with them and you're like blowing it up more. I think what you're trying to say is do what you need to do, but know the energy of, I told you, you told me you didn't, back and forth, your blood pressure going through the roof to the best of your ability. Obviously, it takes time to learn this. So then they don't get that thriving connection from you from the negative behavior.
Right. Yes.
Now back to the point I want to get to is how do we give the compliments? What's the chokhmah in the compliments? How do we say it? Not just say, "Oh, you're doing great."
Right. Yes.
Everybody's texting me. You know, I give my kid a compliment. They ignore me. They're middle studying. I say, "Oh, I'm so happy you're studying." They're like, "Okay, ma," you know, like jump in the lake. So how do we give the nurtured heart chokhmah of compliments that they feel it deeply and it builds their inner wealth?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, the classic way, the classic technique, there are different techniques that we have. The classic technique, the classic way that we give the recognition is we note what we see, right? What's observable, right? And it has to be observable. It can't just, you know, it can't just be a theory. We can't just make it up. Right? It has to be something that we see. We note what's observable. We see what we hear. And then, right? So we can just stop there and stop there, right? You know, I see that you are all ready for school. You're all ready. You have your backpack on, right? I see that you just cleared off your plate. You put your plate in the garbage. I see that. That's it. We just know, just making them feel seen, making us be present to their very actions, right? Just to feel seen, right? Even that is so powerful, right? And if we wanted to take another step and notice what does it say about them? What does that say about you? Now we're not going to ask them what it says about them, but in the way, the next step is say, well, you cleared off your plate, right? You know, that shows that you're responsible, right? That shows you're responsible, right? So we are noting the character quality, right? That's driving that very behavior, right? We're helping a child. We're teaching about a very important quality, right? Through celebrating them, right? So we're not making things up. We're not being vague, and we're not just making, we're theories up. We're cornering a child into his or her success, noting what's observable, and also even perhaps noting the character quality that is the motor for that very thing they're doing.
Do we express it or do we say it?
Sure. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
After we say we see it, how do we go to the next step level to make them feel it?
Right. So listen. So what's your question, Ashi? I mean, how do we feel?
Our approach is you say, I see something about you, and then we go push it to the next level and we say, because of that, I see that you're such a person. You take it and like build it in them, that compliment. Not just, oh, I saw you clean off the plate, but because of that, I see you're responsible on top of it.
Right. That's what we do.
I want to extend that.
What?
Extend the second part. I think the second part is a very important part.
Yeah, I mean, the second part, but I want to, there's another element to this as well that I'm going to address in a moment that you're pushing on that I think is important, right? Yes, the second part is to be able to reflect the very greatness within, not just what they're doing. People don't just do things, right? People have inherent greatness within them that drives them to do, you know, when my daughter is you know, getting a cup of water, pouring a cup of peach Snapple for her younger brother, there is wonderful kindness over there, kindness that is being expressed over there. You need to see how kind you are, right? You need to see how considerate you are, right? So that's felt on a soul level, on a heart level, we call it, right? Now, but you're pushing out to something else. How do we make them feel it? How do we make them feel it? Right? So the truth of the matter is, in the same way that, you know, we can't stop a child from breaking a rule. We can't stop. We have to let go of that. That's one of the things we let go of. We can't force a child to feel a particular feeling in a given moment. Even if that's our agenda. See, this could be a little tricky. Right? Because here my agenda is to build inner wealth. I want you to feel your greatness. I'm going to try to shove it down your throat. Right? We do us, right? We have to do us. We appreciate. They will feel it, right? They will feel it, right? They'll feel it through us appreciating them, through us noting their, you know, noting that behavior, through us noting the character quality underneath, right? The responsibility, the kindness. Right? When we're actually appreciating it, right? But we're giving them the space to feel it out. you know, feel it a little bit now, feel it even on a deeper level the next time, right? We're letting it flow. We're letting the process kind of evolve for the child in our relationship with them.
Sometimes the less you say, the more they feel. It's just that energy that you're putting out there. If you really feel and see their quality, then you don't have to say it. You don't have to say anything. And they like, take it in. They take it in, even though you didn't say anything, but they feel it.
Yes, 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 exactly. Yes, it's exactly. They read our energy. They read our energy. They take in our appreciation. And energy is appreciation.
I would say for the parents that they want to start doing this, it's a hard thing for many. It's changing our whole way of living. We're used to saying, you know, when the child doesn't behave, you know, stop this, stop that. And that, now, don't focus on that. We're going to focus on the positive. Now, it's not so easy. What I would say is step number one is just spend a few minutes without the child, just seeing the child in a better light, in a different light. Just feel it inside of you. Start feeling the positive, like we started the program. You know, what do you see when the kid is misbehaving? Passion, you know, consistency, whatever it is. Start feeling that those positive. So when you feel it, next time you're in the room with the child, you can slowly give it over.
Oh, yes, yes, right. But you're noting something else very important. I'm not sure if these, you mentioned this exact point, but the idea of feeling into our own greatness as parents, really appreciating ourselves, really coming in to like really take time to reflect, hey, like I could have completely lost it then. I could have lost it, right? But I held back. I took the pause that I needed to take, right? What does that say about me? What does that say about my strength, about, you know, about the work that I'm so earnestly trying to develop within myself, right? I'm the greatness of this work of regulating and of real love for my child is to be able to navigate very intense emotional situations. So I'm putting in the work. The more that we can appreciate our own greatness, the more it will, you know, flow more freely from us to appreciating our children, right? We can appreciate our kids through appreciating ourselves. It's the self is, you know, is very much connected to the other.
Okay, we have a few more questions I want to get to, and then we can start wrapping it up. Rabbi Silverstein, unmute.
Hello. Thank you, first of all, Rabbi Ashi and Rabbi Nachum. I listen to probably almost every show of yours. I drive a lot, especially in the summer. And it's I'm a Rebbe. I'm a parent of Baruch Hashem, 8 children, thank Hashem. And a lot of your inyanim are mamish. I put directly deposit into the classroom, into the kinderach. Wow. One thing that stands out is the chutzpah before Mashiach comes. That was the shtark. Remember that shir? I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
Reb David, I think I was once a student of yours, me and my wife and I. Me and my wife and I corrected myself quickly there. And Yeshekayach Reb David, before I even met Reb David, the teachers, the Rebbe's had a session in the Nurtured Heart Approach, and it definitely changed the way that I taught. Baruch Hashem, I'm zeichet to be teaching for 15 years. And Nurtured Heart Approach is a foundation of how I relate to the children. On that note, Oshi was trying to dig in a thistle. It's not something that's, you know, a robotic system. You really have to check into yourself how you're feeling if you're able to do the Nurtured Heart Approach. When I walk into the class and something's not going right, that means something's off. Meaning, if you don't really feel that connection, the chashivas of that child, you could tell him gevaldik davening, it's not going to go in. Like it says, dvarim hayaitzim in alev, nechnasim alev. So it definitely has to be yaitzim in alev, and how it's yaitzim in alev, it could be a mistama many shirim, you can check. So that's really what I wanted to say.
Wow, that's positive energy. I feel it.
It's beautiful. Thank you so much for that, Rabbi Silverstein. It's You speak such truth and that I can tell it's coming from your lathe. The essence of this approach as you're reflecting, which is about, do I really value this boy, the student that I have?
I always tell my first year parents, I feel bad for teaching your kids. I mean, I had to be a first year teacher, but 15 years later, the derech of teaching is you can't have that kid. That kid that calls out your first year, you're like disappointed at that kid. You want to just get him out. Just by that, you messed the kid up. He didn't have to do much. If you don't, if you can't find some way to love that kid, it's just not going to work. It's not going to work.
Yeah. It's an avoda. It's an avoda.
It's an avoda, man. There's no question about it.
Beautiful.
So in Nurtured Heart approach, do they teach how to love yourself first? To stop and pause and see what's coming up for myself?
Yes, yes, yes. Thanks for reiterating that, Menachem. Absolutely. I mean, this is an approach for the self. It needs to start with the self. It needs, before I came on here, or I came on to this podcast, I had to do a little bit of my own self work, right? All the angst that one might experience before coming on to Let's Get Real with Coach Menachem.
I don't know how the nusach is in the other tefillahs, but in the way the Chabad nusach is, we first say brachas and then we say Hareini Mekabel. I always wondered, why is Hareini Mekabel before everything? Because if you don't have Avos Yisrael, the Eibush is not going to get your tefillahs. So why do we say brachas before Hareini? The idea is, if you don't love yourself, you don't give the Eibushter thanks for what you gave me, you can't love someone else.
Yes, 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 you get. And sometimes it's very hard. It's the hardest part sometimes for a parent that has an inner critic or that has, has certain experiences that make it hard, to receive compliments from others, let alone complimenting themselves. It's difficult.
We have to retrain our inner critic with the nurture heart approach. Because there's so much negative. The negative is so loud, and the negative is like constant. And then that positive is like the little kol de mamadako.
Right. And what we're doing, like what you're saying, what we're doing is we are adamant. We're taking a stand. I'm not going to energize that inner critic. I will not energize that. I'm not going to fall down that rabbit hole. I'm not going to do that. We're taking a stand for ourselves. And then we pour on, we see. And sometimes it's in baby steps. What can I appreciate about myself today? What can I appreciate? It is the avoda. It is the practice that really is the foundation for being able to connect with our children, connect with our spouse, connect, we have to connect to the self in a very authentic way. And then it's real. Let's get real, right? Then it's real.
Well, somebody's texting a very good question. What do you do with like children that are like on the spectrum or stuff like that, like the nurture heart approach? Like, how does that play out?
Yeah. So it's energy. It's all energy, right? It's what we're doing is we are like what you noted, Ashi, right? You noted we tend to just be most present with a child around them, right? That's when we're present. So if we are flipping the script, so to speak, not just flipping the script, we're flipping how present we are. We're making this comparative shift where I am more present around, when you are whatever it is that we want to build. Yeah, we want to build inner wealth for children on the spectrum too. There's inner wealth to be built, right? There's inner wealth to be built, and how we're going to phrase it and how we're going to communicate, we can figure that out. But It's the energy, right? How connected, can I be to you around your successes, around your greatness, around the baby steps, right? And sometimes with children on the spectrum, sometimes we have to work in baby steps, right? Things are very difficult. Sometimes we have to, you know, we can't have this high bar of expectation that I'm only going to recognize you when you, you know, when you fully listen to, or you fully do the task that I ask you to do, right? Any moments, any growth, any baby step of progress, right? You started listening, right? Right now you're not hitting in this moment. Right now in this moment, it's the truth of the moment. So even for kids on the spectrum, they can experience us so much more around their successes, our energy and our connection. Any kid will feel that, no matter what label they have, no matter, you know, how neurodivergent they are, they will feel our connectedness. That means that there aren't other interventions to use for specific types of challenges. Of course there are. NHA is not the be-all, end-all, right? For everything, to address every single problem, right? But yes, it is definitely a model that we can funnel anything through, right? And a model that can serve anyone beautifully.
Yeah, we're going to go to the closing segment now, David. Okay, first of all, shkarech for Dr. David Levy for coming on tonight and really opening up. I'm going to say opening up the Rosh Hadvarim of Nurtured Heart. And, hopefully everybody could take it from there to the next level. It's a lot to learn, honestly. It's not the technicals, how to do it and how to implement it is the Chachma. David, if people want to learn about the Nurtured Heart or how to do it, I know you could buy the book. There's online. I know there's, you know, people that teach it. That's the basic ways how you learn about it, like how to actually parent. How does a parent want, he wants to take this approach? How do they get the knowledge to learn in detail how to do it?
If you want the honest truth, I honestly think the best way, especially, it depends where you're at in terms of what you're experiencing with your children. If let's say you have, you know, generally well-behaved children, things are going okay, you're looking for an approach like this to amp things up at home, you know, so where you can feel ever more connected to your children. And you can see their greatness rise. So the book is a very nice option. You know, there's a book called Transforming the Intense Child Workbook. That's a great place to start. There's a website called the Nurtured Heart Institute, .com and there might be some recorded trainings over there. What I would say though is that for someone that is struggling with their child, someone that's really struggling with their child or children, and really needs help, I would suggest more of a training. We have different sizes of trainings, but at least what we call a 6-hour training. Sometimes it spans over the course of 6 to 8 weeks. But to really learn the approach in depth and with a coach, a Nurtured Heart Approach certified coach, really is very worthwhile if you're really having, you know, some significant challenges in the home and you really want to make this a part of your home life.
Yeah. So hopefully there's a lot of facilitators, there's a whole network of from people that do this, right?
Yes. 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 We have wonderful, wonderful trainers. Yes. Dedicated people who do beautiful work with parents. Yes.
Okay, so hopefully everybody can look out and try it if you want to really learn it. I'm just telling you personally, I'm doing it, and I happen to find it to be very phenomenal, just the detail on how to do it and what to do. I feel there's a tremendous chachma there. People say, oh, the chachma focus on the positive. It's very nice to write off a method of parenting or method of therapy and just say, oh, it's very simple. Oh, trauma, oh, you tell them to get over it, you know what I mean? It's very easy to write everything in a one box, but there is a lot of chachma to it, and I think it's tremendous for relationships. And I think the thing that I learned the most about it is just, we do focus a tremendous amount on the negative. Unfortunately, it's the way it is. It's not a bad thing. It's just the way it is. And we don't really take opportunities on the positive. So we lose it out. So like when my kid is doing really well and I'm so much nachs from him and he finished the whole masechta, I'm like, wow, I'm so proud. He did an amazing job. And it's a cute compliment, and he maybe feels a little good with it, but he's missing that daily connection through the compliments and through making him feel his self-worth. That's why I feel such a powerful thing. But anyway, let's go back to the closing part. If anybody's here next week in Shem, every Sunday night at 9 o'clock, next week will be at 8 o'clock, an hour earlier, because we're having a world-famous doctor, Dr. Jacob Hamm. He's a specialist that is the mumch of trauma. He can explain what trauma is, how to deal with it, how to work with it. As we say in the Jewish world, trauma, trauma, trauma. So we're actually going to know what it is. Please join us next week. And it should be a very powerful, deep program, very philosophical. And Dr. Hamm is a brilliant man. So again, next week, the only time will be 8 o'clock. We're doing it for his schedule. And everything here tonight is recorded on MenachemBerfeld.com. If anyone has any questions, you can email coachmenachem@gmail.com. Tonight's share is 217. If you want to hear it on the phone, it's 732-305-9011. And thank you to all the advertising sponsors. Dr. Levy, do you have an email or a website people could get in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. So my email is drdovidlevy@gmail.com. It's drdovidlevy@gmail.com. I have a website, transformedparenting.net.
Okay. Everybody can check that out if you want to get in touch with Dr. Levy. And again, thank you to all the advertising sponsors. We're going to go to the closing segment. I'll go first. Menachem and Dr. David Levy. We'll wrap it up. So again, like I said, I'm personally very big chassid of it so far. And I feel it's something more than parenting. Honestly, I feel something, it's a way of seeing people. It's a way of expressing. And it's a way of really getting deep into core people. I said it before. I'm going to say it again. On the Shabbos, I was by somebody's table. There's a bunch of people there. And I just gave every single person, as an example, a compliment in the proper way. And they all felt like this deep feeling of love in that compliment. You know? And I know how to say compliments, right? Oh, you look good, you're nice, you're smart. But it's much deeper than that, you know what I mean? And if we could really focus on our kids with that, I think that that's the inner wealth, really just making them feel amazing for who they are, and then they feel good about themselves. So a lot of people asking, oh, so how do you deal with this, how do you deal with that? A lot of reasons why, again, it's not the only thing, but a lot of reasons we deal with a lot of the problems is because the good just sort of flows by, and then eventually it's more geschmack to do bad, and then you get more attention for that. So we a little bit create some of the problems by not really focusing on the good. If a kid really thinks he's a good kid, he really thinks he's really smart, whatever mind that he has, not to make it up, David, that's the chachma what you're saying. It's not just to make up that he's, you're so mechanical, you know how to build Lego and the kid has two left hands. Don't do that. It's what you see his mind as. If he's a passionate kid and he fights a lot, then you see that he's very driven. So focus on that. And when he's doing something positive, not beating up his brother at that particular moment, or a minute later, he's taking out, I have a kid, one of my kids, like the second I ask for something, within a second, he's like runs down the block to get me the thing, or like instant, like his power is super. So then I say, wow, look at you. You're so amazing that you ran to do the mitzvah and you ran to get the thing because you knew that I needed it. And that shows me that you're a very caring kid, that you're really intuitive, that you listen. So now in his mind, he knows that he actually ran and did it. He understands the compliment. And now he feels he's a very intuitive kid and a very caring kid. So when he's not with me, he's going to think that that's what he is, because that's what he is. So you're bringing out that inner wealth. So it's so important to really build that that foundation for the kid. So I think it's important. And I'm going to turn it over to Coach Menachem Bernfeld. I'll tell Menachem. Coach Menachem, I see that you're such an attentive person. You listen to everybody and you compliment everybody. And you know when to ask the right question when not. It shows me that you're a very deep person, you're very caring, and you're a very intuitive person. Coach Menachem.
Thank you. It's true. Thank you very much. Thank you, David. The example that I have is for the men in shul. The Baal Torah, when he learns the Torah, he's, you know, cruising through, and makes one mistake, everybody's like, everybody's screaming, correct that word. The idea is, you know, we, you know, cruise through and things work out, but it's only when they don't behave, that's when we wake up. Well, here we are. So, you know, it's, like I said, it's a concept for Benny that have to change the way they approach the kids, the way they're at home. And like we heard, it's really to build their inner wealth. And it starts with ourselves. Many of us have to build our own inner wealth, so that we don't get as triggered, so that I can look at myself, you know, build myself. And like we heard from David, and I could see David, that it's something that you worked on, something that it's a constant work. I think to really give it over to people around you, you first have to be able to understand it, and it starts with yourself. If you can give it to yourself, then you can understand what other people need and give it to them. And that's how we build our kids when they're very young. And like we heard, it doesn't always have to be the words that you say. Yes, you express it, but many times it's just a smile, looking at them, just enjoying their presence, just being there in the same room and not being on your phone, not being busy, because being on the phone means there's something more important. And you didn't say it, but it's something that they pick up. So thank you very much. And my tefillah is, and obviously chinuch and everything that we do is, Hashem should help us. We should open our eyes. We should understand. We should feel it. We should be able to apply it in mitzvah Hashem. So thank you very much.
Dr. David Levy, what's here? Your closing statements you want to leave with everybody.
Okay, sure. Such an honor to be here to start the conversation, to open it up. It's nice haschalah to be able to really introduce the beauty of this approach. Thank you so much for the wonderful opportunity. So I guess I would close by with the following analogy that we like to give to really kind of sum up what this approach is all about, what we want to be able to give our child, the world we want to create for our child. We call it video game theory. And I often will come to a conclusion that a particular child has ADHD. I'll come to that diagnosis. And sometimes parents, they look at me in disbelief. What, my kid who can focus so much on a video game has ADHD? How in the world can you say that that child has attention deficit disorder? And one of the reasons I like to give, one of the reasons why we like to give, that we give for why children are so focused on video games, they're so enamored by video games, is because think about what the video game is. Think about the world, the reality of a video game. Every single success that they're achieving, they're getting celebrated. Bells, whistles, they're getting celebrated for every step of the way, every accomplishment that they're making. And when they mess up in a video game, you lose a life. And then you're right back in the game. You're right back in the game of getting celebrated. You're right back in the game of getting that connection. The rules are clear. They're predictable. They happen every time, the consequence. But most of the time, the child is getting celebrated. That is the world that we want to, not saying it's easy, but that is the world we want to create for our child, where we are sending that connection, that energy, that appreciation, the gift of us to help a child appreciate themselves around all their wonderful successes, around their greatness. Let's save the energy for those times, because that creates true transformation. You know, we're not an approach of modification. We are an approach of transformation. That's going to create transformation within the child, within the parents, within the relationship, in the whole home.
Amazing.
Okay. All right, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. Everybody should have a wonderful evening. Enjoy the snow. Anybody on the East Coast over here, enjoy the Northeast that's coming this week. And I'm sure we'll see you next week, January 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time with Dr. Jacob Hamm on the topic of trauma. It should be an amazing program. Everybody have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Kol HaLashon, a whole world of quality content.